Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Psychic Teachers. I'm your host, Deb Bowen.
And I'm Samantha Fay.
And we are just delighted and honored that you are with us tonight or later if instead of being with us live tonight you are watching that game where they run around the outside with the funny shaped ball.
I think it's a good game, so I wouldn't blame anyone.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, this is football, right?
Yes.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry, folks. I don't know a lot about that. In any case, welcome. We're happy that you are with us whenever it is you are with us. So we're delighted that you're here. Our topic tonight is death, because we're going through the alphabet, right?
That's right.
And tonight we're on D's. And Samantha and I looked at a lot of different topics that are related to the psychic world. But we thought, you know, we get a lot of questions about death. And it seemed like a really good topic to just explore and kind of scratch the surface on tonight. We certainly won't cover everything about death in an hour, but we're gonna talk about it. But before we get into that topic, Samantha has a related crystal of the week, and I have a related animal of the week. So, Samantha, you want to talk about your crystal?
Sure.
And you'll spell it as you talk about it.
I know,
I'll put it
in the chat room
for you.
I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it. It's D-I-O-P-T-A-S-E.
A, wait a minute, I lost you.
D-I-O-P-T-A-S-E. So phonetically, I would pronounce that dioptase.
Yeah, I would too.
But I'm sure it's pronounced differently knowing me. It's a beautiful blue-green color. It almost looks like a cross between a sapphire and an emerald. Dioptase, however you say it, is found in Iran, Russia, Namibia, excuse me, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, North Africa, Chile, and Peru. It's a powerful healer for the heart and an opener for the higher heart chakra. It promotes living in the present moment and also helps to activate past life memories. It helps to bring a positive attitude to the wearer, and it instills the ability to tune into one's own resources. It helps to turn negativities into positives, including negative thoughts, negative thought programming, negative experiences. It overcomes the feeling that you don't have enough potential, that you are not enough. It is especially helpful when you feel stuck and you don't know where to go next or what direction to take. Mentally, it is a strong mental cleanser and detoxifier. It releases the need to control others and to control the outcome of a situation. It acts as a bridge to emotional healing, especially for the child within. Its green ray reaches deep within the heart to absorb festering wounds and forgotten hurts. It dissolves grief, betrayal, and sorrow, and is extremely effective for healing heartache and the pain of abandonment. Dioptase teaches that ultimately pain and difficulty in a relationship is a mirroring of an inner separation from the self. Repairing that link and drawing in love at all levels, it can heal an emotional black hole that is desperate for love. This stone clears away perceptions as to how love ought to be and brings in a new vibration of love. Spiritually, dioptase placed on the third eye activates spiritual attunement and psychic visions. It brings awareness of inner riches. Physically, it helps to regulate cell disorders, activates T cells in the thymus, eases high blood pressure, and is said to alleviate pain and migraines. It is also said, according to Judy Hall, to prevent heart attacks and heals heart conditions. It lessens fatigue and overcomes shocks. It is a detoxifier, helping to lessen nausea and regenerating the liver. It's particularly effective for overcoming addictions and stress. You should wear it over your higher heart chakra, or carry it or place it over your heart chakra when meditating, or over your third eye to activate spiritual visions.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great stone.
Mm-hmm. And to me, it kind of feels like a gentler malachite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hear you. Is it a clear stone or is it a dense?
It's green and blue. It literally looks like a sapphire and an emerald gave birth to Dioptase.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah, it's very, very pretty.
And it's good for working with grief issues.
Yes.
Nice, which is a great stone for us to be talking about tonight.
Yes.
Good. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Our animal tonight is dove. And I assume that doves are pretty common around most of the world. I think they are. They're certainly very common where we live. I love watching the doves in my backyard. They, according to Ted Andrews, relate to feminine energies of peace, maternity, and prophecy. And there are tons of lore about the dove, and they certainly have various meanings in various cultures, which I really appreciate. In the Greek tradition, Aphrodite was born from an egg brooded by a dove. The oracles of Dodona, which Alexander sought, were found by a dove. To the Slavs, the soul would become a dove at death. To the alchemist, it was the symbol of sublimination. To the Christians, it is a symbol of peace. To early pagans, it is a symbol of the yoni, or female sexual organs. It has been associated with the goddesses Astarte and Isis from Egypt. It is considered the embodiment of maternal instinct, which I just liked a lot. To the Pueblo people, its feathers were often worn and used in prayer sticks. The morning song, that lovely almost cooing that they make, was considered an invocation to water and an indication as to where water could be found. I found that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It is... I don't want to skip down here to something I wanted to share. The voice of the dove is a rain song. Out of its mourning, it evokes new waters of life. It reminds us that no matter what our life conditions, new waters and new lives are still possible. It is... associated with dusk, particularly, which is a time where there is a thinning of the veil between the physical and the spiritual worlds, the past and the future. The dove can help you to use these times to see the creation process active within your own life. The song of this, and I'll close with this, the song of this totem tells you to mourn what has passed, but awaken to the promise of the future.
Wow.
Lovely.
That is lovely.
I know it.
I used to have two doves that would sit on a little tree outside the window at my old office. That's so sweet. Oh, and I have to post pictures on Facebook. I took a walk with my friend yesterday, and we sat for 10 minutes and watched a hawk just sitting 5 feet from us in a tree.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, it was so beautiful.
Absolutely.
Okay, so tonight... we're going to be talking about how different cultures deal with death. And I wanted to start just by reading something that I posted in our Psychic Teachers Facebook page. So if you want to read along with me, you can go to Psychic Teachers on Facebook. It's two babies talking in a mother's womb. And I just think it explains a lot about how we can all have different views of what happens after we die. So here's the quick story. In a mother's womb were two babies. One asked the other, "Do you believe in life after delivery?" The other replied, "Why, of course. There has to be something after delivery. Maybe we are here to prepare ourselves for what we will be later." "Nonsense," said the first. "There is no life after delivery. What kind of life would that be?" The second said, "I don't know, but there will be more light than here. Maybe we will walk with our legs and eat from our mouths. Maybe we will have other senses that we can't understand now." The first replied, "That is absurd. Walking is impossible, and eating with our mouths? Ridiculous. This umbilical cord supplies nutrition and everything we need. But the umbilical cord is so short. Life after delivery is to be logically excluded." The second insisted, "Well, I think there is something, and maybe it's different than it is here. Maybe we won't need this physical cord anymore." the first replied, "Nonsense. And moreover, if there is life, then why has no one ever come back from there? Delivery is the end of life, and in the after delivery, there is nothing but darkness and silence and oblivion. It takes us nowhere." "Well, I don't know," said the second baby, "but certainly we will meet Mother, and she will take care of us." The first replied, "Mother, you actually believe in Mother? That's laughable. If Mother exists, then where is she now?" The second said, "Well, she's all around us. We are surrounded by her. We are of her. It is in her that we live. Without her, this world would not and could not exist." The first baby said, "Well, I don't see her, so it's only logical that she doesn't exist." To which the second replied, "Sometimes, when you're in silence and you focus and you really listen, you can perceive her presence and you can hear her loving voice calling down from above." Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, I love that. And what a metaphor for how we have varying views of what happens to us at that moment when we, our bodies, are no longer breathing.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, and I love the symbolism because people who have had near-death experiences do describe a cord that connects us, that is severed when we die.
Right.
And how interesting, I never thought of that, that of course we have this cord when we're in the womb and it is severed when we're born.
Isn't that interesting? I you know, that's the first time I think in my whole life I've put those two cords together.
Yeah, me too.
Isn't that cool?
And it just reminds me, like I've always said, that the universe gives us all the answers we need to know in nature and everything around us. And here's more answers right here in the nature of birth.
Absolutely.
So if you want to read that, that is on our Psychic Teacher's Facebook page.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I also find it interesting, to Samantha, that we are talking about death tonight at a time where in the wheel of the year, we are beginning to talk about new life and quickening. Tomorrow is the holiday of Imbolc, in my belief. And Imbolc is a holiday that honors the goddess Bridget. Remember, we talked about her a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that early time of the very first quickening of the earth. And I love that we kind of come full circle even in our shows.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. Yes,
well,
Jerome has said in the chat room, it all comes full circle.
And it does come full circle
indeed.
Yeah, very, very nice. So true. So gosh, Samantha, there's so much to talk about. I'm not even sure where we should start.
Well, I just think I think we should talk about why it's important to look at what other societies and religions and cultures believe about death, because I think we can learn so much about who we are by looking at how we grieve. And I find it so sad in our culture that we are separating ourselves so much from dying.
Yeah, we are.
You know, people don't die at home anymore very rarely.
Nor do they leave the body on what here in the South we used to call a cooling board.
Say more about that.
In some of our old houses in the South,
mm-hmm.
one of the doors in the parlor came off of its hinges in a certain way, and it was easy to remove, and it was laid across sawhorses, and the body was washed and dressed and laid out on this door, basically, laying on sawhorses while the casket was being built by the family.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it was called a cooling board. There even, in certain parts of the South, there was a wicker basket that was used that was called a cooling basket that somebody actually wove, a coffin-sized basket. I've seen one.
Wow. Well, you know, my mother still to this day will tell stories about watching both her grandmothers die. And she was a little girl, and how powerful it was that everyone gathered around the bedside and everyone held, you know, the older lady's hand, and they watched her take her last breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, just a little sad that we just remove ourselves so much from death because... And I think if you look at our culture, I think we do believe in some strange, irrational way that we can avoid death. If you look at the way we try to reverse the clock with aging, you know, and the way we're trying to be younger and act younger all the time.
And we certainly sanitize it. We certainly don't want to be close to it and all of the physicality of it.
Sanitize it, yeah. That's a really, really good word for it. And I think that our beliefs about death and dying impact what happens when we die.
Well, I agree.
Right? Like, I believe that if you believe that only your religion is going to heaven, I think you might just see your people for a while until you wake up fully.
You know, there are jokes about that, but I won't tell them on the air.
Yeah, there are a lot of jokes about that.
That's right. And you know, to me, I guess because I'm just so, I love studying and learning about other cultures, and I think their death rituals and their view of the dying process and what and the afterlife, and we'll be talking about that in another show. I think we can learn so much about who a people is, and I use that in a collective way. Their view of death also colors their view of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the two are definitely interwoven.
I agree.
You know, I love if we could start talking about the Jewish traditions.
Well, certainly we can talk about the Jewish tradition, and again, a caveat here to what Samantha and I are getting ready to say. We are speaking in very general terms,
yes.
and we do honor the fact that various sects of various religions and beliefs have varying practices. So please know that. But
yep.
Yes, I'm happy to talk about Judaism because it's a beautiful tradition.
Yeah, and yes, so that's a very good caveat because we know not which we speak of.
Great. Okay, folks, get ready to learn, but we don't know what we're talking about. Okay, I got it. All right, y'all hang in there with us.
No, I had read in some of my research that one of the things Jewish people do is whenever they visit your grave, they leave a rock.
That's right.
To let you know that they've been there.
That's right. Several years ago, I had two friends who had been married for many years. They were an older couple who were Jewish, who died in a horrific car accident.
Hmm.
They were in a tiny little car, and they were hit head-on by an 18-wheeler. So it was very traumatic and very sudden and, of course, obviously totally unexpected. And so there was a double funeral. And in their tradition, the casket has to be, first of all, the bodies are washed by men and women, depending on your gender. So women wash women, men wash men. And these people are in their synagogue. These people were conservative Jews. In their synagogue, these people, that was their gift to the synagogue, was that they washed the bodies of the dead and wrap them in a shroud, and they are placed in a wooden coffin that has holes in the bottom of it, which I think is absolutely wonderful because it moves the
speeds up
the decomposition process, and they must be buried by sundown of that next day because they're not embalmed. And you're right. There for a year there is, and I love this. For a year there is no headstone. The headstone is placed on the grave a year later, and there is an unveiling ceremony. And what you leave on that headstone when you go to that unveiling ceremony are pebbles, and that's true anytime you visit the grave thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
Just to say, hi, I've been here. I'm thinking about you.
And a Jewish friend told me that whenever you have a celebration in the family, whether it's a bar mitzvah, a bat mitzvah, or a wedding, that you bring an invitation to the tombstone.
Oh, interesting. I don't know that one.
I thought that was really neat. Like, come on, you know, because to invite them. I just think that's such a neat idea.
Oh, I think that's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that. That I don't know. But I think that's just lovely.
I mean, I always think that, you know, they'll be there anyway, but I just think it's so nice to specifically, you know, set out to invite them.
Right. There is also a lovely notion of something called sitting Shiva.
And sitting Shiva is historically done by what's called a minyan, and that word means 10 men. Now, again, that has changed culturally in some groups of Jewish people I do know. But these folks who sit Shiva, forget for how long, I want to say it's many days, they are there to take care of the family, to greet guests, to pray. Mm-hmm. I know in my friend's tradition, when they died, there were, it may be 7 days, I'm not sure, there were folks there who just took care of everything, and there were men and women who came and sat Shiva. And I just love that tradition.
I have to just have a brevity break here. I saw a movie last year with Jane Fonda and Jason Bateman and Tina Fey about how a father of a family dies, and it's said that his last, the movie's called This Is Where I Leave You. And Jane Fonda tells all her kids that their dad's last wish was that they all sit Shiva together, just stand each other. It is the funniest movie. I love that movie.
Oh, for goodness
sake. So just a little psychic teacher's recommendation.
Okay.
This is where I leave you.
Okay.
I also thank you, Halo, in the chat room for writing that. It's a book. I did not know that. I'm going to have to read the book now.
What are you talking about?
Sorry, I'm just looking at the chat room. This Is Where I Leave You is a book.
Oh, that's the name of the book.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and the word Shiva literally means seven. Thank you for that information. I love our listeners.
I do, too.
I know. Thank you
And Jerome has
us.
Also said at the end of Schindler's List, there's a scene where those that were saved by Mr. Schindler are leaving stones on his headstone.
Oh, how lovely.
I know.
Isn't that lovely?
Okay.
All right. So that's kind of the idea of Judaism. What about Buddhist beliefs? Let's talk about Buddhism for a minute.
Okay.
Of course, one of the tenets of Buddhism is reincarnation.
Yeah.
And often in Buddhism, the body is cremated, and then for 7 days, I love that, again, that numerology of the sacredness of seven appearing again in cultures. There are funeral prayers for 49 days. This is an article from BeliefNet. 49 days, prayers are said weekly, and people who are mourning help. The idea is that the prayers help the deceased in that post-death transformation to awaken to their spirit of their true nature on the other side. Isn't that lovely?
Wow, that really is.
Yeah.
And again, it's that sense of...
And 7 times 7 is 49.
Right, but there's that sense of not only giving the deceased person time to transition, but giving the family members time to grieve.
Absolutely. You know, and I could wax eloquent for days on the travesty of American culture in terms of the grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you over it yet, you know? I will never forget the phone call I got the day of my mother's funeral wanting to know when I was coming back to work.
The day of her funeral?
The day of my mother's funeral. My boss called and wanted to know when I was coming back.
That's just despicable.
It was. I've never quite gotten over that. Can you tell in my voice? I've never quite gotten over that. you know. Yeah.
But, I mean, that is how it is here, which is a shame.
And, you know, a lot of the study of death and dying is called thanatology. And a lot of thanatologists say that it takes a year to go through that grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
But in American culture, I often have talked to so many clients who couldn't begin, really, the real deep grieving process during that first year because they were too busy dealing with insurance companies and Social Security and insurance and you know, all that legal stuff that you have to do, wills and things. And you have to deal with that first.
Yeah.
And that's certainly an American cultural thing that drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to say it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, because of our separation from the reality of death and our desire to, you know, avoid it, a lot of people who are dying don't prepare properly.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
I've spoken to so many clients whose parents never left a will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never outlined where their things are supposed to go. And I think it's because they just don't want to face their own death and think about it. And so that's why I respect these other cultures that we're talking about, you know, who, and I definitely respect our American culture. I'm not saying I don't. But, you know, who really don't shy away from it.
Right.
I mean, even at our, this is, I mean, look, I've always said on the show, like, I don't necessarily, like, talk about what I do every day. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because on when my children go to Mass every week at school, and I had to, one of them forgot a Mass book, so I had to drop it off, and it was right after they were getting out of Mass. And I'm running the book into the office, and there's a hearse in front of the church, and a funeral is starting. And my first thought was, I wish they planned that better. I don't want my children to have to walk past her.
No. Did you really?
I really did. That was my first thought.
That was so American of you.
I know. And I thought, shame on me. Like, but that was my first thought was, I don't want my kids starting their day walking past a hearse. So.
Oh, my goodness. Do you know that there's, in England, there's a museum for hearses?
Really?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if it goes there.
I don't. No.
Imagine that as a first date.
Well, you know, back
well,
in the 60s.
After dinner, I thought we could check out this new museum.
Back in the 60s, a lot of hippie people drove hearses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
That's funny. Okay. So yes, I do believe that the Buddhists have a really interesting and wonderful view in terms of reincarnation. I wish more people believed in reincarnation.
Well, I obviously think so too, but you know, folks don't always agree with us, and that's okay, you know.
Well, I guess, you know, this one guy was talking to me, and he was like, you know, my grandmother passed away, and we were so close, and she's never come to visit me, and blah 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 blah. And as we're talking, it turns out that he believes in the Bible literally, so he mm-hmm. believes that his grandmother is sleeping underground.
Well, now, you know, not all, was he a Christian?
Yes.
Okay. Not, you know, they're not all Christian denominations believe that, but some do.
Yeah.
The Advent Christians, for example, often if you go to an Advent Christian cemetery, written on the headstones are the words, asleep in Jesus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what you have maintained, is that that's what you, and therefore they don't believe in cremation.
Right, which, okay, so here's my question. I get it. You don't believe in cremation because there's nothing for them to put together. But what about, like, the people who died in 45 A.D., whose bones, there aren't bones, right? Like, aren't they dust by now?
You want details. And I don't mean to make that flippant, but you know, that's one of those things that I bet you, I don't know that there's an answer for folks who hold that belief.
Okay.
You know, I don't know that there is. I know that my parents belonged to a Christian denomination that did not believe in cremation.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was the first person in his church to be cremated. And I did not know that Daddy had broken all sorts of rules until I got to the church with his ashes.
Oh, I remember you telling that story.
Yeah, the minister was not happy. Not happy that I had my father in a jar in my arms, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I understand it, and I respect those beliefs, I do, but you know, like this man so wanted to hear from his grandmother, but I said to him, as long as you believe that she's sleeping, your subconscious is not going to allow her to visit you in your dreams or, you know, in any other way.
Mm-hmm.
So... That's
yeah.
why I wish
If you
that.
Believe she's asleep, she's not coming to visit you.
Right. She's sleeping.
Right. Exactly. Renee has made a comment in the chat room about playing in family cemeteries in the South.
Yeah.
We have absolutely amazing sculptures in our older Southern cemeteries, and many of them have benches in the family plots.
and that was so the family could visit the cemetery and have picnics.
Yeah.
And you know, there were certain days, and this isn't just a Southern thing, but certain days of the years where the family gathered and cleaned the grave once a year, you know, went and planted new flowers and did all that sort of thing.
What is the cemetery that gives tours here?
Oakdale.
Thank you. Yeah, at Oakdale Cemetery, because it's so Victorian, most of them have a little small wrought iron fence. And when I say small, I mean like one or two feet, with benches. And when you go on the tour, they will say that that people would go there after church and have picnics, and it was a social outing. It was a way to see and be seen as well as visit your loved ones.
Absolutely, and in the spring when our azaleas are in bloom, that is one of the most lovely gardens in our community. It's beautiful to go through there during the spring. I'll tell you a quick little story about that cemetery because it's really so ironic. During the yellow fever epidemic here, there was a need to move the cemetery, what was then far out of town. So the cemetery is about a mile and a half away from the main area of our historic district, and the property was donated by a physician in town. The irony is the first person to be buried in that cemetery was his daughter, who died of yellow fever.
I know, I heard that. That's so sad.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, Halo has written in the chat room, Germany has the most beautiful cemeteries. They have little garden plots with statues and lanterns, and the families will decorate the small garden area with the headstone.
I think that's lovely.
That is lovely.
Mm-hmm. It is. It absolutely is. So, you know, even within Christianity, there are varying views of and varying ways of doing death rituals, you know. And some things are allowed in some Christian churches and not in others. My mother wanted Elvis played at her funeral because my mama loved Elvis. And fortunately, Elvis sang a lot of gospel music, so it worked out all right, you know. But I have a feeling I'm not sure that's what mama wanted, but that's what she got. At least she got some Elvis. She did not get Heartbreak Hotel, you know. So there you go.
Oh, that is funny.
I know.
I love it.
But, you know, it's interesting. A lot of folks think that cemeteries are filled with ghosts. That's one of the least, the cemeteries are one of the least haunted places in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, who hangs around looks at that?
Yeah. Cemeteries are for us.
That's right.
You know, and Jerome has written that he loves to photograph headstones and statues. And I'll tell you, the best class I ever took in college was a history of graveyards. I know it sounds so strange.
No, not at all.
But it was wonderful, and all we did in that for that semester was we would tour different graveyards throughout Connecticut, and she would tell us what everything meant. I mean, everything on a headstone means something. Like the type of tree that's engraved will show you if they lived a long or short death. Like a willow means something, and a birch means something else, and a rowan means something else.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much symbolism that people used to put into all of that. I think it's so cool.
Yeah, I've done grave rubbings, gravestone rubbing, and that's a lovely thing to do because you can pick up things in the stone that you can't see with the naked eye.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, there we go. I mean, lots of different views on all of this from a Christian perspective. And certainly, where do we go after death? It varies in various Christian denominations. The notion of purgatory in Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very different than, you know, straight to pearly gates and in Protestantism, you know.
Right.
Oh, Samantha, we're at the halfway mark. We need to take a break.
Okay.
We do. Wait. We need to tell you all about our fabulous sponsors. So I want to tell you about Peach's Gifts because Peach's Gifts just rocks. If you are looking for supplies for your next craft projects, Peach's Gifts, an online scrapbooking store, carries stamps, paint, stickers, paper, and more. Every purchase comes with a free gift and discounted shipping worldwide. Save an extra 15% off your entire order with promo code PSYCHICTEACHERS. We invite you to shop with us at peachesgifts.com, and I'll put that in the chat room. It's a lovely place, folks, and you can just get lost in the website and order all sorts of cool stuff.
That is so true.
It is true. It is absolutely true.
Okay, and tonight we are also sponsored by Audible.com, the world's leading listening provider of online books. If you go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers, you can get a free one-month trial of Audible, and it really does help support our show, and you all have been wonderful in supporting us, so we
thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. The book I'm recommending this week that is on Audible is The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. It is 6 hours long, so you get that for free, and you get 6 hours of listening on your computer, your iPod, your phone, whatever you listen to your material on, and that's The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. They also have a lot of variations of that. They have meditations on living, dying, and loss, The Essential Tibetan Book of the Dead, and it's also in Spanish on Audible as well.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful book. I own a copy of it.
So audibletrial.com/psychicteachers. And we also want to remind you that Deb and I both offer individual 1- and 2-question email readings. So if you can't afford a full reading with us and you just have a quick question, feel free to go to our website, SamanthaFay.com and DebBowen.com, and you can purchase a 1- or 2-question email reading, and we'll get back to you within 1 to 3 days on that. We also have a lot of downloadable telecourses if you're looking to open up your intuitive abilities this season. We offer things like Discover the Psychic in You, The Mystical Tarot, Inviting Crystals into Your Life. And once you purchase it, you get the downloaded class, and then within probably 12 hours, you're so good, Deb sends you all, will send you all the handouts.
Right. It downloads automatically to your computer from our vendor, and the auditory part. Yeah, that's it, right. And then I send you the accompanying handouts via email.
And next week, we are going to take a break from our Paranormal A to Z theme, and we're going to do our mailbag show. So we already have a lot of questions that have been emailed to us. But if you have a question you'd like us to ask on air, please feel free to email it to us, psychicteachers@gmail.com, or you can just post it to our Facebook page, Psychic Teachers, all one word. And if you want to help us out, if you could go to iTunes and search Psychic Teachers, all one word, and leave a review for us. It's super fun for Deb and I to read the lovely things you write, but it also helps our podcast to come up in search engines so that more people can find us. So thank you so much for supporting us. I look forward to doing this show every week, and I feel like our listeners are extended family.
Oh, indeed. Absolutely. Yeah.
So thank you for your support.
All right. We do. We can't tell you enough how grateful we are for you, and how much we appreciate hearing from you and your support. Indeed. Samantha, can
okay,
I talk?
So back to dying.
Can we talk about the pagan beliefs?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, let me talk a little bit about pagan beliefs, because I know a little bit about those. Many, many, many pagans, not all pagans, but most pagans, believe in reincarnation. And we believe that that the dying process should be, as much as possible, should be joyful. It's a celebration of a transition. It should be in the ideal world with your loved ones around you and people nurturing and taking care of you. It's very much a hospice kind of perspective in paganism, and we believe that when you die, yes, your body dies, but certainly your soul lives on, and you transition to something that we call the Summerlands. And you, as many pagans as there are definitions of that term, but it is that transition place that we go to rest and recuperate and get our bearings and review our lives and meet with family and friends and loved ones and our four-legged people across the veil. And
then we make preparations for coming back. So we come back to learn more lessons the next time. There is, like in Judaism, in the perfect pagan world, the body is washed with special water, ocean water or sacred water of some sort, anointed with oil. Usually there are blessings that are said. There's smudging that goes on with the process. And our memorial services, again, are as varied as we are. Just to give you a little idea about how that works for us, I had for years a Maxwell House coffee can in the garage that had written on the lid, Deb's Ashes. That's what my idea of what somebody should do with my ashes, and then they should be scattered out in the ocean. And I had somebody say to me a couple of years ago, Deb, Maxwell House, really? You should have a chock full of nuts can. I just howled. I thought that was so funny and so true. So I've dispensed with the Maxwell House can, and there's a chock full of nuts can in the garage.
That is so hilarious.
So if I die before you, Samantha, be sure it gets fused, okay? but it is, you know, it is a celebration of transition, is the way that pagans view this process.
Which is similar to the Druids. They also believe in successive reincarnation. But what's interesting about the Druids, they believe that you can reincarnate as a tree, a rock, or an animal in addition to a human.
Yes, they do, and that's unique, I think, to Druidism.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is.
They don't have a belief in purgatory or anything like that, but they believe that we reincarnate again and again and again until three goals are met, and those are wisdom, creativity, and love.
Oh,
I like
lovely.
Those goals.
Wisdom, creativity, and love.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And the Celtic Druids believe that you were taken to the other world by the god Baal. Which I feel like there's such a joke in there, but I won't go there.
No.
Because it's literally spelled like we spell Bile.
B-I-L-E?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I just wanted to say about that is so many ancient religions, the Egyptians, so many believe that there is somebody that transports you to the other side.
And that person is called a psychopomp.
A who?
Mm-hmm. The term for that. The person who transports you to the other side,
uh-huh.
The term for that is psychopomp. I'll put it in the chat room. It's P-S-Y, wait, let me click on here.
Okay.
P-S-Y-C-H-O-P-O-M-P.
Psychopomp.
Mm-hmm, psychopomp.
Would you want to be a psychopomp on the other side, Deb?
Well, if that was a job that was needed, I wouldn't mind being that person.
It wouldn't be. That would be kind of a neat job.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the reason why I wanted to point that out is because I have never once done a reading where someone from the other side has come through and said, like, I was all alone when I passed.
Oh, no. People always meet them.
Always.
Always.
You're never alone for a second.
And their four-legged family members come and
mm-hmm.
greet them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jerome has said in the chat room, if you come back as a rock, is that it? I mean, does a rock die? How long would you remain a rock before you got to be a person again? And I think those are such good questions to think about. In all my studies of crystals, they all say that they believe that crystals and rocks are living things and that they take one breath every 100 years. So that, you know, 100 years is but a moment to them. So I don't know.
Well, I don't know that either, but if you approach it from this perspective that everything is energy
mm-hmm.
and that we just vibrate at various rates, then there's no difference between me and a crystal
mm-hmm.
in that sense.
Yeah.
We're just vibrating at different rates.
At different rates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a book I've got it in my wish list. I'm going to be reading it soon, but I've got too many stacked up right now. But it's called The Healing Power of Trees.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole Celtic belief system connected with trees, and we transitioned through various tree cycles, like we do the zodiac. We transition from rowan to willow to whatever to whatever.
Yeah, I think it's so neat. And I just think studying all of that will help get me more in touch with nature and with that present moment awareness.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think talking about death and approaching it in a realistic way rather than a fearful way or a superstitious way is a positive meditation as well, because it keeps us focused on life. And what's really important.
Absolutely. You know, in the Lakota tradition, and I can't speak to other First Peoples folks' beliefs, but I can talk about my experiences, and I've had two with my friends on the my Lakota reservation that I love so much. In one family, the family was a mixture of traditional Lakota beliefs and also Christians. So the person who died was honored in the Lakota way with star quilts and people sitting with the body for 4 days. But he was put in a casket. He was not embalmed, but he was put in a traditional casket and buried in a cemetery. In the other situation that I was a part of, this family was traditional Lakota, and while it's now illegal to put people up on scaffolding and let nature take its course up in the air on a scaffold, so they did have to bury the body, but the body was wrapped in a buffalo hide and with herbs, particularly sage and sweetgrass, and was on a trestle in a lodge, what, you know, a canvas lodge, for 4 days, and people sat and took care of the family and stuff, and then the body was then buried, and on the grave were representations of the four directions and of the winged and swimming and four-legged people. The head of the grave, for example, there was a buffalo skull, and when I got there, I brought seashells to represent water for him. And, you know, there was other stuff as well.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's so fascinating that different people approach death in different ways, and yet you can find commonalities in each of the traditions.
Absolutely. And the Lakota belief after death is that you walk, they call it walking the red road into the sky is the phrase they use, because there's a notion that we are connected to the stars, and their view of their creation story is, if you see pictograms of it, it looks like the same double helix as our DNA.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so grateful that we have things nowadays like life insurance and Social Security and 401ks. I am, but I think that what all of those cushions do is they prevent us from relying on one another. And what I do love about some of the older traditions is that when times were hard, when the main provider of the family died, or when a tragedy happened with a child, or the mother died in childbirth, the whole community really did come together to support them emotionally, financially, physically, with food and hugs and just their presence. And I do think it a little sad that today, when people die, you go to the funeral, you send a card, you send flowers, and that's, you bring a casserole, and that's about it.
That's right. And you know, those the casseroles are important. In fact, I have a book called Food to Die For, and it's a book about, and it's a recipe book of funeral food.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It is hilarious. It's a funny little book. But, you know, there are things that you do, and there are things in various traditions that are really important. I remember when my dad died at about 2 in the morning, and about 7, I called a really good friend of mine and said, "Daddy's gone." And her response was, "I'm cooking butter beans. I'll be there soon."
Wow.
And that was exactly what she should have said,
in
my family's belief. She should have made those butter beans and come on over. And she did. And she did not, she didn't leave me for 4 days. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that.
Yeah, I just think it'd be nice if as a culture, we got back to more of that. Now, the other thing I think is interesting is for us to talk about how these have changed throughout the centuries.
Oh, tremendously.
Yeah. I mean, I love to think of the Vikings. I love the way they did that.
Or the Egyptians. I mean, good golly, we could do a whole show on the Egyptian death.
I know. Ritual. I always think about the Egyptian, like, pharaoh getting to heaven and being, like, and all his, like, slain servants and cats around him. And God, and, or whoever your higher power is, going, so wait a minute, you killed all these people? And the pharaoh being like, well, yeah.
I might need them.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. But if I could choose the way I go, I think I would like to be put on a boat and have the boat set on fire and just sail off into the sunset.
Well, very Viking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very Viking. Yes, that's certainly a way to consider doing it, you know.
Before we finish out the show, we only have about 9 minutes left. I think it would be neat for us to talk about what you and I think happens when we die.
Oh. Well, I sort of did when I explained the pagan piece, but...
Right, but I know you have different views than just that.
I do.
Like, when you take your last breath, what do you think will happen? Who do you think will greet you?
Oh, I think it's going to be a party. And I mean that in a very wonderful way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly dead relatives who will be there. My wonderful, wonderful cat, Merlin. I jokingly say that one of the reasons, and I'm not really joking, I guess, when I say this, one of the reasons that I don't... I'm not afraid of the idea of being dead is because I know I will get to hold him in my arms again.
Mm-hmm.
And I, to me, that will be just wonderful. But I think of family members. I have friends who are on the other side that I know will be there. And I often say that I wish I could take a piece of paper with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a lot of questions, and I wish I could get them all answered. You know?
I know. I always say God and I are going to sit down and have a long cup of tea.
I know. I mean, I got a bunch of questions, and so I hope I'll get some of those answered, you know?
Yeah.
But I do believe that there's a welcoming committee, and I believe that there's a transition time to kind of help me orient to this new world I've moved into. My image is because I've read this in so many different cultures and in so many near-death experience writings, is that it will just be an electric, vibrant place of energy and amazing colors that we can't even imagine here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will happen, and I think I will then be given jobs to do. I think that just as I have life lessons to learn in this lifetime, after I've done that life review and kind of see what I still need to be working on, I'll be given some tasks to do while I'm on the other side. And I hope I will do them well. And then as the time comes for me to start planning to come back, I have this, my image of this is always that my big support team, you know, my guides and all those folks will sit down at this kind of big conference table, and we'll have like a big computer, and there'll be this kind of database that will start running, and we'll start to look at, well, okay, what are you going back to do, and how can you best learn those lessons, and how can you work with your soul group, because I believe in soul groups, to help each other as you go back to the other side. So what kind of family do you want or need? What kind of culture do you want to live in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always curious. One of my real big questions is, why in the world did I end up
a white woman in the American South in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
What is culturally that lesson about?
Right, right.
You know, why wasn't I born in Paraguay, for example? I mean, you know, I don't know.
I think for me, part of it is appreciation and gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a man being interviewed on NPR Friday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
He lives in India, and he spent the last 6 years saving up for a refrigerator for his wife.
Yeah.
And the reporter went with him into the city, and they went into, like, what I would imagine would be like a Best Buy. There were flat-screen TVs and stereos
right.
and refrigerators
right.
and ovens, and he picked out the refrigerator he could afford and took it back to his village, and I just thought, oh, like, I take my refrigerator for granted.
Well, until you need a new one, and then you're appalled at how much it costs. But generally speaking, yes, we do, because it's a part of our culture. It just sits in the kitchen, you know. Yes, yeah, it is very different. I love and have come to embrace Helen Greaves' perspective that Sister Frances shares in Testimony of Light. That probably has resonated with me more than anything else about what life might be like on the other side. It's one
yeah,
of my favorite
books.
I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder, like, you know, if I die now or when my time is, I always wonder, like, who will greet me? Because I don't come from, like, the nicest family. And my dad's mom never wanted to know me or any of us, and neither did his dad. And basically because my dad married an Italian, God forbid. And there's that prejudice. Yeah, and my mom's parents were pretty mean, too. So I always think it'll probably just be my good friend George and my mother-in-law Maggie and my lovely cat and my two dogs.
I'll come get you.
You'll come get me?
Oh, you betcha. I'll be right there.
Well, I also believe that we have, like, you know, I've talked about this before. I believe that we have a soul family, and I believe that for some reason I chose to incarnate without my soul family. I think they might still be over there. So I think I'll be reuniting with people I don't consciously know right now.
Think about this way.
Right.
Our soul family isn't necessarily a biological family.
No, definitely not. It can be friends and pets and teachers. And I think our soul family can be enemies. You know what I mean? Like, I think they can incarnate as an aggravator.
Well, you know, in Richard Bach's wonderful book, Illusions, when the Messiah is shot, Richard, the pilot, is just appalled, and he said, "Who was that guy? Why did he hate you so much?" And the Messiah says, "Oh, no, he was a friend."
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Cecilia's asked a good question in the chat room. I wonder if it feels the same to hold them on the other side, or is that part of the human experience?
And I don't know the answer to that. That was a great question, and I can only envision it from my very human perspective.
Me too. I did have a dream, a very vivid dream visitation, where George came to me and he hugged me, and I couldn't feel anything. And he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I haven't learned how to do that yet."
Oh, that's right. I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah. So I don't know how that works.
So tell us about your beliefs about that.
Well,
your turn.
I do believe that we have a little bit of a purgatory. I think it's called the life review.
Oh, see, I don't see it as purgatory.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, like, I think what we used to think of as purgatory is really the life review. And I don't believe it's anybody judging us. I believe what I've read from NDEers that you sit in judgment and excitement of yourself and your life and what you've done. I don't think it's all self-judgment, but I do think there's a lot of, ooh. And I think once you get through that life review process, then you go back to your welcoming committee and there's a lot of celebrations. I believe you're then able to create your own home. I'm shown that a lot. I believe that you're then able to pick a job to do and things to study. And I believe that you're shown how to visit your family to let them know that you're okay.
I believe all those things, too. You articulated that beautifully for me, too.
Well, we're out of time. I have so much more to say about this.
I know, I do too. Good golly, we just sort of scratched the surface and we didn't get to talk about a lot of different cultures that I would love to talk about.
I know.
But we hope this has spurred you to do your own research.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And next week we will be answering your questions. So if you have a question you want us to ask on air, please send it to us.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully we'll get to it. And in the meantime, have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week and be the light.
Thank you, everyone, so much for being with us, and have a great week. And blessed Imbolc to our pagan listeners and Candlemas to our Christian folks.
Very nice. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.